Ed Robertson, hoping you're enjoying this encore presentation of TV Confidential. We'll be back with a brand new edition of the program next week.
Hi, this is John Biney. You're listening to TV Confidential.
Well, let's hear it for him. Come on out here.
Ed Robertson, welcoming you to TV Confidential. Radio talk show about television, though, play part two of our conversation with Lou Antonio in our second hour. Lou Antonio, Emmy-nominated and Directors Guild of America-nominated director of more than 200 hours of network and cable television, and an actor who has appeared in more than 60 popular films and TV series, including Cool Hand Luke, Splendor in the Grass, Gunsmoke, I Dream a Genie, and The Fugitive. Lou will share a few stories about working with David Janssen, Wayne Rogers, Ephraim Zimbalist Jr., and Elizabeth Taylor. Plus, he'll talk about the role that he played in discovering Renee Zellweger and Henry Thomas. Lou Antonio will join us in our second hour. We hope you'll stay tuned for that. Coming up later on in this hour, we will play part two of our conversation with Grammy-nominated singer, comedian, radio host, and showbiz raconteur, Jeffrey Mark. We hope you'll stay tuned for that as well. In the meantime, Tony Figueroa and Donna Allen are with us as they bring us This Week in TV History. Tony's segment, as always, is brought to us by our friends at Story Salon, Southern California's longest-running, regularly performing live storytelling ensemble. For more information, storysalon.com, facebook.com/Story Salon. What do you have for us tonight?
March 4th, 1968, The Dick Cavett Show first aired.
Dick Cavett, which airs on Get TV, if I remember correctly.
Yes, it is showing. I believe you're right, Get TV. Over the holiday season, I watched a few on Get TV when I was in Cincinnati. And the two that really was the first interview he did with Robin Williams. So you have to imagine, this is Robin Williams right at the height of Mork and Mindy. So this had to be around, 1978.
And I think at that time, Dick Cavett was doing a show for PBS.
For PBS, yeah. Dick Cavett, I think I have a good breakdown here. ABC Daytime, March 4th, 1968 to January 24th, 1969. ABC Primetime, Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, May 26th to September 19th, 1969. ABC Late Night, December 29th, 1969 to January 1st, 1975.
Yeah, that last show, I think he was the show they brought on to replace Joey Bishop when they canceled Joey Bishop.
There was a brief period where you had Merv, Dick Cavett, and Johnny Carson.
All on late night. All competing against each other.
And they were all out of, out of New York.
Correct. I believe that's
correct. And there was one night, unbeknownst to anybody else, Jerry Lewis did all three shows without the other two knowing.
Huh.
That could never happen today.
Because they were not shooting at the same time.
Right, because Johnny and Merv, they would pre-tape theirs.
Dick was live. If you look at the proximity in New York where the three studios would be, in a Rockefeller Center, I guess CBS, they would have done it.
To West 57th?
Yeah. And ABC, was it in Times Square?
That
at the
would
time?
Be on, I think that was either Times, like Avenue of the Star, Avenue of the Americas? Yeah. Sixth Avenue.
Yeah. And, some of these shows they would do from a theater as opposed to a TV studio. Yeah. But somehow Jerry Lewis was able to appear on all three shows at the same night, and nobody knew that he was doing all three shows.
Ha!
The only time I know of something that happened in more recent history was during the writer's strike. Jimmy Kimmel appeared on with Jay Leno, and then Jay Leno appeared on Jimmy Kimmel's show, but that was a drive from Burbank to Hollywood and vice versa.
Yes.
But that they planned to do because they had no writers, and they thought it would be a cool shtick to do. So that's the only other time I could think of that. So, PBS, October 10th, 1977 to October 8th, 1982. USA Network Primetime, September 30th, 1985 to September 23rd, 1986. ABC Late Night, Tuesday and Wednesday night, September 22nd to December 3rd, 1986. I wonder if that was around the time they gave Jimmy Breslin the show.
Yeah, I think they did like a wheel. Cavett was on twice a week, and Jimmy Breslin was on twice a week, and I forget what they aired on Fridays.
Yeah. I think Jimmy Breslin resigned in the New York Post. Dear ABC, I no longer require your services. Thank you. And Jimmy Breslin, who gained fame after Bernard Getz. Well, he was always local, but I think he got national.
Yeah.
I think he was, CNBC, April 17th, 1989 to January 26th, 1996, and TCM from 2006 to 2007.
And within the last 10 years, he played the criminologist in the New York stage revival of the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
You can look him up on YouTube.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
I always felt smarter and cool when I watched Dave Cavett.
Yeah. Yeah, he was. He was like Merv in the sense that he would have maybe not world leaders, but he would have subject matter that catered to a different demo that
yes.
Johnny was catering to.
Definitely,
yeah. Johnny kept things light. Johnny, the whole thing with Johnny, as David Letterman once put it, Johnny tucked you in at night.
Yeah, which yeah. I think was the mission statement of the Tonight Show.
Yeah,
remember, is it still the mission?
I think it is with Jimmy. I remember Sigourney Weaver, the daughter of Pat Weaver, during the whole controversy with Jay and Conan and everything was up in the air. She was hosting SNL.
Yeah.
And in lieu of her monologue, you know, a comedic monologue, she addressed the audience. She said, you know, my father created these shows. And really, I don't know if there's any sort of, sorry, not to digress, there's no monument to Sylvester Pat Weaver. There should be something there because he created the Today Show, the Tonight Show, and many
well,
other...
Well, there is in Steve Battaglia's book from Yesterday yeah. Today, the history of the Today Show.
Yeah.
There's nothing in Rockefeller Center which a bust or a plaque or...
I think there should be a studio named after him. There should be his name should be on a building. If it's not, it should be. But she basically read his memo to the executives at NBC, and basically this will be a show to close out the so people can end their days, and it's going to be lighthearted and non-controversial. So he basically had that as the mission statement, that this is not going to be something that's going to be too heavy. It's supposed to be light, it's supposed to be fun, entertaining, and not controversial. So that was the original mission statement of the Tonight Show.
Whereas Dick Cavett's show, I would say, was sort of the precursor to what
Can we say Charlie Rose?
I was almost hesitant, but no. Let's just say Charlie Rose. I mean, the one-on-one interview, in most cases, one guest for the entire 90 minutes. Charlie Rose did a 60-minute show, but Cavett did a 90-minute show when he first started in the late night.
Cavett worked with a live audience.
Yeah.
And Dick Cavett still had a monologue.
And as you say, Donna, I mean, it was, what's the word I'm looking for? It was, Cavett was an intellectual. And so it was designed to not necessarily help you fall asleep, but to kind of stimulate your thought. And you would have...
And I'm sure sometimes he just put you to sleep.
Yeah.
Depending on the guest.
Yeah. Whereas the Tonight Show, and particularly the Johnny Carson Tonight Show, was to kind of help you unwind.
Yeah.
Whereas...
Let's like make some fun in the monologue of what's happening in the day.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, we said this a couple of years ago when we did a segment on Merv Griffin. Merv thrived better in daytime. Because in daytime, you're, for the same reason why Oprah thrived in daytime. Because, you know, 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, you're coming home from work or you're more inclined to watch a lengthy, sustained conversation with world leaders or newsmakers and so forth. Whereas if you're accustomed to late night shows that are supposed to help you unwind and help you fall asleep, you know, you may not be geared to watch a one-on-one conversation with Groucho Marx that you have to stay up to 1 o'clock to watch because you can't tape it and watch it the next day.
Yeah.
True.
I got a box set of the Dick Cavett Show talking to comedians.
Uh-huh.
So you had Groucho. And some of these are wonderful time capsules that just people like Groucho, George Carlin, just wonderful, wonderful interviews. One-on-one. And I mentioned that we saw the Robin Williams. I remember when that first aired, I was living in, I was visiting my family in Puerto Rico, and it was on the local PBS station there, and Mork and Mindy had not shown there. So everybody heard about this phenomenon called Mork and Mindy and this incredible comedian named Robin Williams, but nobody had seen it there. You know, when it would air dubbed in Spanish. So this is the first time Dick Cavett's going to be on, and Robin, So my brother and I stay up late to watch it to see, you know, my brother can see who this guy is. And my brother was in hysterics just because seeing, but also Dick Cavett could hold his own with Robin Williams, yeah. And not every talk show host. Most Johnny Carson just, first of all, Johnny Carson couldn't stop laughing when Robin would come on. But he basically had to surrender. I give up. You could see, especially his first appearance on The Tonight Show, it's like everybody just gave up. Just keep the cameras on him. This is the best we can do. And it was, you know, especially young, cocaine out of his mind, Robin Williams. Just have the cameras follow him and hope the censors don't have a cow.
Yeah.
And Dick Cavett was the first that could actually banter with Robin Williams when he was full-blown Robin. And doing little bits and shtick and all that, improvising, things like that. And he could just, he could pick up the ball and throw it back and throw hard. And especially with this show, you know, you had this kind of living room set that Dick Cavett was based out of, where you never thought about the fireplace or the potted fern or anything like that. And Robin is running around playing with anything that is nailed down or not nailed down, and then running up to the audience and then, you know, making fun of the crew and all. And Dick is able to follow him. I don't think anybody else was ever able to do that with him. And it's so fun to watch him work with that, and then to have, like you said, you know, the intellectual conversation with Woody Allen or Groucho Marx.
Yeah.
But Dick Cavett was great with all of that. Merv, yeah, they were showing Merv on Get on Martin Luther King Day.
Yeah,
they had his Martin Luther King interview.
Yeah,
and they had a couple, but Martin Luther King Day, they did one with Martin Luther King and then one with Bobby Kennedy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think a lot of times when people look back at Merv, they're thinking, ooh.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Merv pretending to be fascinated by what Zsa Zsa Gabor had to say, which is its own talent. Or Merv and Arthur Treacher.
Yeah. Mm.
But to see him with Martin Luther King, first of all, they're not at the desk.
Yeah.
They have like two director's chairs in the middle and spotlight on them. And to ask these really intelligent questions, you could tell Merv read the newspaper.
Yeah.
Merv didn't just read Variety. And obviously, if you looked at his bank account, he obviously read the Wall Street Journal as well. When you think about Merv was comparable to Donald Trump, if not more, at the time, you know, buying casinos.
But with substance.
With substance, yes. The
Thank
thinking
you for
man's
that.
Trump, yes. Yeah. So they're asking these questions.
I mean, he probably was a billionaire.
Yes.
Yes.
And then, you know, he's making money off of Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune.
Yes.
But to have these really intelligent questions and to introduce, I would say, mainstream America, middle America, to who this man is, and then to open questions to the audience. And you do a pan of the audience, you know, and have all these people throw questions. All the questions were respectful. And I think these questions represented questions that Americans had. But then to have Dr. King, you know, politely answer all of these questions, which some of them, yeah, like I said, nobody personal attacks like what maybe Donahue would have later, or you know, Jerry Springer or something like that.
Morton Downey.
Or Morton Downey, yeah. You know, zip it. But they were asking questions about some of his beliefs, some of his philosophies, and, you know, we were still using words like Negro to have these people, mostly, I think they were all white, you know, just, and different dialects from different regions of the United States, bringing these questions, and it was a civilized, intelligent conversation. I mean, Merv was brilliant with that.
Tony and Donna are with us for a special encore edition of This Week in TV History, dedicated to the career of Dick Cavett. This segment originally aired in March 2018. We'll be back with a brand new edition of TV Confidential next week.
Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Just before the Cavett Show on the late 1960s, mm-hmm. Cavett Show, the one that succeeded Joey Bishop, ABC tried a weeknight national talk show with Les Crane. Now, Les Crane was mostly a local mm-hmm. talk show host. He started off at KGO in San Francisco doing radio. Then he moved to New York and he did television. And he had quite a following in the New York area doing late night newsmakers. But they and ABC gave him a Monday through Friday slot for about 13 months in the 1960s, and he had again, it was counter programming. It was trying to present something other than Johnny Carson, and it did not work because Johnny was in his height, and Johnny defeated a lot of challengers in his 30-year.
Alan Thicke was around to ask. He would tell you.
That's right, mm-hmm. But again, that was an early attempt to do what Cavett did throughout the bulk of his career.
But also what you're mentioning goes back to a prior conversation. We were talking about local talent.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jerry Springer was a local show. Sally Jesse at Raphael was a local show. I'm concerned now because we don't have we'll have a local news anchor that might be picked up by a bigger market and then may go national.
Yeah.
And we may have
Soledad O'Brien, who used to be on CNBC or MSNBC. She was originally an anchor at KRON in San Francisco.
Yeah. Or Joy Reid, who's on MSNBC.
I like Joy Reid.
And mm-hmm. I think everybody loves Joy Reid.
Yeah.
She was a local reporter in Orlando and covered Trayvon Martin and got the national attention there and then moved up. But she still technically lives in Florida, but she does the show out of New York, and she's operated out of the Brokaw Center on the West Coast as well. But I think the news anchors and reporters get the attention. That's basically how Brokaw eventually, you know, Brokaw was brought to do local in L.A., but he was covering, I think he was in Atlanta, and then if something happened overnight, it might have been faster to get Brokaw from Atlanta to cover the story, you know, just logistically. And then when he was in L.A., he was covering Governor Reagan's campaign, which made him very well noticed on the national level and nightly news and the Today Show. Today Show, nightly news, all that. So, but the other towns, the local talk show hosts and some of these other people that could have been staples in these markets, they would rather have, you know, something syndicated.
Yeah.
Than to have the local based show. And I get it, because you could have Phil Jones, who was the biggest sweetheart of, you know, whatever city, Columbus, let's say. And if the choice was between Phil Jones or put on Ellen, guess who wins? It's going to be Ellen or Oprah. So I think a lot of these talents don't exist like they used to. The local talents that not only would be there for the supermarket opening and be the grand marshal of the parade, but they're just not, that talent's not getting fostered anymore.
That is a subject we should revisit at another time.
Yeah.
ChiloTelevision.blogspot.com, also StorySalon.com, Facebook.com/StorySalon. Donna is now the author of a 4-novel series called the Fall Again series, which you can learn all about. It's available at Amazon.com, wherever books are sold online, as well as FallAgainSeries.com. Tony and Donna, we'll see you both next time.
Next time. We'll play part 2 of our conversation with Jeffrey Mark next on TV Confidential. This Week in TV History now has its own podcast you can enjoy
This Week in TV History with Tony Figueroa on Megaphone and wherever else you find podcasts.
Know someone with a drinking or drug problem? Learn how to get sober after we share these stories.
I was 35 with two beautiful children when my life and addiction started to spiral out of control. After my divorce, I went into a depression cycle and started drinking more often and using prescription drugs. After my second DWI and arrest, my ex-husband threatened to take our children away from me.
I was 17 when I became addicted to heroin and meth. I thought I could quit on my own, but I couldn't. It hit me when I was arrested.
Get sober now. Your private insurance may cover costs, and we'll get you here. It's simple. Just call Elite Rehab Placement right now. Please, don't wait. Your life matters to us. 800-917-2194, 800-917-2194, 800-917-2194. That's 800-917-2194.
Be part of our conversation. If you like what you hear, have thoughts on this week's program, or have an idea for a future edition of TV Confidential, we'd love to hear from you. You can email us at talk@tvconfidential.net, talk@tvconfidential.net. You can also message us at facebook.com/tvconfidential, x.com/tvconfidential, or @tvconfidential on Instagram. And if you're listening to us on the TV Confidential podcast, please be sure to hit the subscribe button.
This portion of TV Confidential is brought to us by our friends at Front Porch Realty, the community of realtors in the Northern Bay area of California that is committed to finding the solution that is best for their clients. Whether you're a first-time home buyer or looking to sell or lease your property in Northern California, call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 or visit frontporchrealtygroup.com for more information on how they can help you.